Sea Grant and Lake Superior, sustaining the freshwater sea. A production of the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Superior's sister, the St. Louis River Estuary and the National Estuarine Research Reserve. In the previous two episodes, we examined the contributions that Gene Clark has made towards establishing sustainability for Lake Superior harbors. In this final installment, we're going to hear about some of the newest developments in the ongoing effort to sustain the freshwater sea. The St. Louis River Estuary is one of more than 20 freshwater estuaries along Wisconsin's Lake Superior shore. You may recall from the fourth episode that due to pollution from heavy industrial use as well as agricultural inputs, the St. Louis River Estuary has been identified as a Great Lakes area of concern. Freshwater estuaries are a tremendous resource for wildlife, as their backwaters and islands provide nesting habitat for waterfowl, in addition to spawning and nursery areas for fish and amphibians. They also provide numerous opportunities for human recreation and tourism. If you haven't been up that way, the last 23 miles of the St. Louis River comprise the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota. The river's still largely forested watershed is almost 2 million acres in size. The combinations of ecosystems within the lower St. Louis River watershed is very unusual for Lake Superior, or for that matter, anywhere in the world. In October 2010, the state of Wisconsin and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, together with many regional partners, jointly designated portions of the St. Louis River Estuary as a National Estuarine Research Reserve, which you will hear referred to as NEAR in the following interviews. The Lake Superior National Estuarine Research Reserve is one of two on the Great Lakes, and only the 28th in the entire country. The reserve is comprised exclusively of public lands and waters, and contains over 16,000 acres of representative terrestrial and aquatic habitats, including riparian and riverine habitat, riverine islands, emergent freshwater marshes, interdunal wetlands and scrub swamp, aspen dry and hardwood forests, and open sand beach and dunes. It's a unique area, so I went up to Superior to speak with Sean Schooler from the Lake Superior NEAR to discover more about what was being done there.
My name is Sean Schooler. I'm the research coordinator for the Lake Superior National Estuarine Research Reserve up here in Superior, Wisconsin. I try to bring together a lot of the researchers who are actually doing a lot of research in the estuary currently and also past information. I have to try to really promote better stewardship of the resources. There's a lot of resources that estuaries provide to people and to animals and plants. A lot of these wetlands have been changed in the past. Currently, what we're trying to do is understand how they're going to change in the future, particularly under climate change, how that might affect what humans get from these estuaries, how the plants and animals respond to that as well. We're interested in invasive species, ecosystem services, as well as how the Great Lakes are very different estuaries than coastal estuaries, because there isn't any salt involved in these estuaries. So even though there's still a mixing zone between the river and the lake, there isn't a salt influence, which changes the chemistry quite a bit, and also the species assemblages. And so one of our main interests is understanding what Great Lakes estuaries are, how they function, and how we can better preserve them.
Estuaries are particularly rich habitats. You see a lot of species that come in and out. Why is that so?
They're transition zones, and so you have a transition zone between terrestrial environments and fully aquatic environments. In those zones, you have a lot of diversity of habitat, and that diversity of habitat often is associated with diversity of organisms that live in those habitats. Essentially, you get a lot of different organisms living in that zone between the terrestrial and the aquatic.
So kind of a biodiversity hotspot. When you say ecosystem services, you'll see that phrase being used a lot. What does that mean to you, and what does that mean specifically here at the estuary?
Well, there's different components to the way that ecosystems function, everything from the biogeochemistry to the organisms and to the people who live in those areas. Those are ecosystem functions. But we talk about ecosystem services, those are mostly aimed at human uses, what humans derive benefits from. In this case, most of the services are derived are things like fisheries. Much of the sport fisheries, all the fisheries in the Great Lakes, really come from these coastal estuary habitats, wetlands on the coasts. That's a primary one. There is also changes in biogeochemistry, things like nutrient cycling that occur, how sediment moves from terrestrial environments through the rivers into the lakes is all affected by estuary processes, by the water movements. There's also the habitats themselves that people go to recreate in, as well as the industrial uses. The fact that a lot of these bays are heavily used for shipping, so movement of bulk goods around the world, and that's a key component as well that we're interested in. And that's linked again to sediment processes and how much dredging has to be done to get boats in and out of channels. It's all linked together, and those are all what we would call ecosystem services versus ecosystem functions. I don't think most people understand how dynamic the habitat is in the estuary, how much the water flows in and out, and how much that flow of water and nutrients really changes the whole system. This whole system we see out there at any given time, in a snapshot view, is a very dynamic system that can be moved from one state to another very quickly, at least in geologic time. In fact, the whole area here in Lake Superior is still increasing in elevation. There's this isostatic rebound due to glaciation. So we talk about climate change affecting water levels, but in fact, here the elevation is actually increasing by, I think it's about a centimeter a year, due to this isostatic rebound from the pressure of the ice that occurred 7,000 or 8,000 years ago. That, combined with the water movement itself, creates these really complex habitats. And those habitats are generated and regenerated by a very dynamic system of sediment movement, water movement, and biogeochemistry that occurs in these habitats.
What excites you most about NEAR and the project that's underway here? What gets you up in the morning?
Well, what I particularly like about it is that the research that I am looking into and that I perform and that I coordinate, there's actually a mechanism for that to get out to managers and the general public, students. So all the NEAR system functions similarly. All these individual place-based National Estuarine Research Reserves all have a research coordinator, an education coordinator, a coastal training program coordinator. And all these people work together to not only do the research, but also to get that information out and to ask people what information they need to make better decisions and bring that information back to the research side of things so we can actually ask questions that'll make a difference in the future.
I had heard of two researchers that were asking questions that made a difference. So I headed back to the University of Wisconsin in Madison and went up to the limnology lab on the shores of Lake Mendota.
I'm Emily Stanley. I'm a professor here at the Center for Limnology and also at the Department of Zoology, and I am working on a project with colleagues at University of Minnesota on the ecology and biogeochemistry of the St. Louis River estuary.
My name is Luke Loken. I'm a first-year master's student working on the same project. I'm based here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with advisor Emily Stanley.
The idea of this project is to really be able to establish basic patterns of water chemistry as the St. Louis River flows from the top of the estuary, out of a dam, and in toward Lake Superior, and understand some of the changes in nitrogen and phosphorus and carbon that happen as a result of that transit, and really to be able to figure out if there are places or times that are particularly important in some of those transformations that we see.
My main focus here is the nitrogen aspect of the estuary, seeing where there's hotspots for denitrification and or nitrification happening, to try to see how the estuary fits into the Lake Superior, St. Louis River estuary nitrogen dynamics.
Probably most people have a vague idea that nitrogen and phosphates can get in the hydrologic cycle and overload it somehow, maybe causing problems for the lakes. Could you explain a little bit?
Sure. We use nitrogen and phosphorus as fertilizers for corn and for all of our agricultural crops, really important for that sort of productivity. And the same sort of effect that nitrogen and phosphorus has on farm crops or your garden has the same effect in aquatic ecosystems. The only problem is we really don't want plants to grow and algae to grow in those aquatic settings. So the stuff that washes off of fields and off your lawns ends up fertilizing places like the St. Louis River estuary and also the Great Lakes like Lake Superior. Apparently, for example, this year, one of the first reports of a blue-green algal bloom happened in Lake Superior, which would suggest that some of these extra nutrients are finding their way in and having effects that we're really not wanting to see.
What can you do with this nitrogen and phosphorus once it's in the cycle?
Once it's in the cycle, what's going to happen is a lot of the algae communities are going to explode, if you will, and grow significantly. So what you get is all these green algal masses that leads to poor water quality. Getting rid of it out of the system is a difficult process that usually takes landscape change and or other policy change, starting at the farm level and working its way down across the entire landscape.
Are you involved with NEAR?
The project that Luke and I are working on with our friends at Minnesota was part of a special sea grant program that they had honoring the founding of the National Estuarine Research Reserve, the St. Louis River. This opportunity that we have this grant through is specified to have joint collaboration with Minnesota and Wisconsin researchers and to try to work with the folks at the NEAR. And it's actually been a very easy task for us because they've been unbelievably helpful, providing lab space and facilities and resources to help us get this research going. And really a chance for us to take a crack at doing research in this place we may not have done otherwise without this sort of special competition. It's really also been a bonus for us to have this chance to talk to people like you and to other reporters to tell them a little bit about the science that we're doing there. And that's all been possible through the NEAR.
Tell me about the science. You guys seem pretty excited about what you're doing.
Yeah, well, it is a lot of fun. The St. Louis River estuary is not like any aquatic ecosystem I've ever worked in, and I've worked in a lot of them. Most people, when you say estuaries, think of saltwater environments, or at least where rivers meet the oceans. But really, it's where rivers meet very large bodies of water, and the Lake Superior fits that bill. Seeing water travel back and forth from the lake into the estuary, from the river into the estuary, is an unusual dynamic. It's a lot like a river, but it's a little bit like a lake, and trying to sort out these bidirectional movements of water that are like tides in the system is very challenging and makes this a remarkably interesting environment to study. From the estuarine point of view, we have some advantages that we aren't dealing with a salt gradient like you do if you're along the coast, so maybe things are a little simpler. Maybe we have a chance to have some insights to how estuaries work and pass on to our salty colleagues on the coasts.
I've heard this St. Louis estuary described as a kidney for the lake or a filter. Is that a good analogy?
That's funny. I sort of think of it myself as a washing machine, and maybe that's because the water goes in and out and because, you know, washed from the lake into the estuary, from the river into the estuary. But yeah, I think this is a metaphor that a lot of people use of kidneys and things like that for wetlands because they do have the capacity to collect and remove a lot of things that you don't want washing out of the system. Preliminary results suggest that's the case for this estuary, although this kidney has been worked over a lot.
Superior is a very busy port. There must be some restoration you're angling for, but there must be considerations too.
Definitely, it's a working ecosystem. There's no doubt about it. And it is funny, the first time going out on a boat to do sampling, to be there and look over the left side of the boat and see an island where they've been doing active restoration to try to reestablish some of the tern populations on your left side, look over to your right, and then see this huge boat with big piles of ore on it on your right. It is a study in contrasts, and it is tremendous the amount of activities that are going on in terms of both the science, people trying to get some of the habitats cleaned up. I learned about a place called Coffee Ground Island, which I haven't seen yet, but is apparently just piles and piles of sawdust from the milling industries that have accumulated there. There are Superfund sites as well, but at the same time, there is also this tremendous vitality of folks trying to get, as I said, bird populations back, habitat restoration, cleaning up a lot of the backwater wetlands and things like that. It is a remarkable set of contrasts and tons of research and restoration and management activities going on there in a pretty small chunk of real estate.
One of the things we're doing in this podcast is focusing on how we're helping graduate students as well and the contribution that they're making. So How did you find out about Sea Grant, and what's been your take on that so far?
I was introduced to Sea Grant from Emily. I originally contacted her to work in the CFL here, the Center for Limnology here in Madison. It's where I've been wanting to go to school for a while now. And she had the funding together with Sea Grant to offer me a graduate position here. Everyone I've met at Sea Grant has been great, and I can't thank you guys enough for giving me the opportunity to come study estuaries and do the things I love, hopefully become more educated in it. Sorry, I go down these roads.
This is part of our Sea Grant training, is having a mic stuck in your face and thinking on your feet. That's important.
Oh, no, it's a good point. Luke is getting experience that usually a lot of grad students don't have, of getting to talk to reporters and outreach people and work with managers while he's doing his science. And sometimes that just doesn't happen, or advisors tend to protect their students from that because we think they should be just doing their research and nothing else. So he's actually getting a much more diverse graduate experience than a lot of other people through this funding.
What kind of position would you maybe see yourself in once you get done with your studies?
I'm coming from a tech position out in Washington State. I used to work for Olympic National Park doing aquatic ecology, mainly in the backcountry. So I'd go hiking around to lakes, wetlands, intertidal zones, counting organisms, looking at physical data and putting it all together in more of these wilderness settings, but not a lot of engaging with the public. Most of our places that we would go to are kind of remote, and I wouldn't have to worry about running into many hikers or reporters or anybody else out in the backcountry.
Except bears.
I did meet a lot of bears. Most of them are friendly. Mountain goats, Roosevelt elk, things along the coast, which was a beautiful place to be doing aquatic ecology. So that's where I got my start. After graduate school, I see two roads diverging, either continuing in the academic field, or I could also switch gears and go work for an agency like the National Park Service, the EPA, USGS. Management of natural areas would be another way I could go about this.
What do you feel personally are some of the most important goals that you're shooting for? What would be the best outcome of all your efforts?
I think the main thing is just understanding how this estuary sits between the river and the lake and the urban aspect, teasing apart some of these variables that we don't know much about working in this big, broad setting. Being able to tease it apart in a way that we can say definitely there's some gradient from upper estuary to lower estuary, from developed to non-developed, from lake to river, finding some of those key variables and figuring out what the main drivers are of the system.
I think Luke has said it really well. If you can do those sorts of things, you can hone in on habitats that you really want to pay attention to and protect when those are the cases. And you want to know if there are any sort of emerging water quality issues. As I said, there's some funny long-term trends that have been going on in Lake Superior. It's nice to have a good handle on the role the estuary may be having in influencing those trends or reinforcing those trends, things like increases in nitrogen in Lake Superior and disappearance of algal blooms and things like that. If we can sort of help focus the lens more on the science of both the river and the lake, then we'll have done our job. The project goes through 2013, so we have two solid years of it. We have some really interesting things to look at in that period of time.
Of course, you might get floods, but then yes, it'll be a study of floods and estuaries, right?
Very well could be. That's the nature of science. You go out looking for one thing, but nature will turn you one way and you have to show the data as it is.
Well, if you're doing it right, you come up with more questions than you saw it, right?
Yeah, that's right. That is the hallmark of all good science, is you're confused at a higher level.
Okay. For the final segment of the series, I wanted a different perspective. So I headed back up to Duluth to meet with Marie Zwickoff, Sea Grant's science communicator for the region.
So this is a historic hotel.
We met at one of the grand old hotels on the Duluth waterfront. It was a cold and windy Lake Superior day.
We can go up here on the mezzanine. Isn't this cool?
Yeah, it looks 30s Art Deco, maybe. Yeah. Tell me, what is it that you do? How does it contribute to Sea Grant, and why are you so excited about it?
Well, I work out of the Lake Superior Field Office as a science communicator, and my specialties are Lake Superior and the St. Louis River Estuary and the research that we fund for it, and then getting information out to the public that they can use as a result of the research and outreach programs that we have. And I'm excited about it because I love Lake Superior. It's a really cool place. The estuary, I think, is really underappreciated. The St. Louis Estuary is the largest influx of water into Lake Superior, at least on the American side, and doesn't get the attention it deserves because it's been polluted and has had a lot of human impacts, and Sea Grant is one of the partners helping to clean it up and restore it.
Why are estuaries important? What's the function of an estuary in an ideal ecosystem?
Well, I wrote a poem about that that I brought along. It gets into the difference between the estuary and Lake Superior. Bring it up here. It's called Two Sisters. I am the quiet, hardworking one. My sister gets all the attention. She is larger than life, loud, showy. I am slender, forgotten, kind to animals. Her eyes are icy blue. Mine are warm brown. My sister has a temper. You know when she's angry. She'll slap you and swallow you whole. I am calmer, still dangerous, but my hands are gentler. These days, people are taking notice of me. A team is giving me a makeover. I may never be as popular as my sister, but I have a lot to offer. It's all a matter of making the most of my assets, repairing the neglect and overuse, restoring the smooth skin of my youth. My sister, she might get jealous, but what can she do? I'm protected by my friends who stand in a line between us. Besides, what does she have to be mad about? My life flows into hers. What helps me helps her.
I think the main point I wanted to get across was about the estuary, because people don't think about that. The lake gets all the attention. It's why tourists come here and things. But I think as time goes on and more work is done on the environment of the St. Louis River, people will start coming here for that. It's really the birthplace of the city. It's the lake and the river are why this city is here. But now the river is finally getting some of the attention that the lake has had in the past.
Sea Grant and Lake Superior, Sustaining the Freshwater Sea, was produced by Chris Bocast, that's me, for the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. I also performed the music, which I wrote for the series. Executive producer for the series is Moira Harrington. Our director at Sea Grant is James Hurley. This podcast and all our podcasts are public domain. Until next time.